Welcome back to the Adventure Calls podcast, the show that empowers queer folks and their families to move, live, and thrive abroad. I'm your host, Jess Drucker. This is one of our first shows back after a long hiatus, and it takes us all the way around the world to one of the world's friendliest countries for LGBTQ folks and their families. And that's right, when you're truly considering moving as far away from North America as possible, my guest today is the one who can help you get there. Bridget Romaines is the founder of Mobile Relocation, a company that helps people get settled in New Zealand. Bridget was the proud winner of the 2023 Global Mobility Champion of the Year at the Employee Mobility Institute Awards, and her company Mobile Relocation won two awards for Best Workplace Wellbeing Initiative and New Way of Working. In this interview, Bridget talks about her own time living abroad. She is an expat through and through herself, how she ended up back in New Zealand, and we talk about what it takes to relocate to New Zealand as a U.S. citizen specifically. New Zealand is one of the safest countries in the world, ranked second on the Global Peace Index. There's free healthcare, an unrivaled foodie culture. Of course, the landscapes are breathtaking, and it's an adventurer's dream as well. New Zealand is relatively LGBTQ-friendly, with queer rights protected by the Human Rights Act, and same-sex marriage rights actually extend also to immigration, meaning you can bring your same-sex spouse to New Zealand as well. Most cities have pride festivals that continue to increase in size and support each year from the community. So if you're looking for an English-speaking, queer-friendly country with loads of adventure, food, and also great coffee, tuck in, get ready for today's guest, Bridget Romaines of Mobile Relocation, all the way in New Zealand. Bridget, thank you so much for coming on today. I'm so excited to talk to you. People are very interested in relocating, especially to New Zealand. I'm getting a lot of inquiries. I have a couple of clients that are interested in relocating to New Zealand. So there's going to be a lot of interest, I think, in this conversation. So thank you so much for coming on today.
Kia ora, Jess. Look, it's a pleasure to be here. We have a lot of American clients who've made their way to New Zealand in the last few years, and good to hear that the interest is still holding up.
I wanted to sort of kick this off with you, just talking a little bit about how did you get involved in relocation? So, and the name of your company, of course, and a little bit about your background so we know who we're talking to.
Right. Who I am today is Bridget Romaines, Principal of Mobile Relocation. Where I've come from, basically, I think I was always actually meant to be an expat. I grew up in New Zealand. My father was a mountaineer who climbed in the Himalayas with Sir Edmund Hillary. So we had all sorts of interesting people coming through our home, and, you know, our holidays were things like trekking in the highlands of Fiji and sailing in the Maldives. This was way back in the sort of 70s and 80s. So in those days, we were kind of like the weird family. And I can't say that I grasped all of it fully, you know, enthusiastic, but I did grow up with a much bigger awareness of the world than a lot of my peers did for that reason. So it was very normal for me to be among people of different cultures and be curious and just be, you know, enjoying that experience, I guess. So my own journey started when I left home as soon as I could at the age of 17, went to university as far as away from home as you can in New Zealand, which is right down the bottom of the South Island to Dunedin, very different city to Auckland where I come from. And from there, I lived in Wellington. I joined the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade, which is the equivalent to State Department. So I was a diplomat. I was posted to Singapore and India. So that way it kind of played out through my life, this whole idea of being an international person. So it's something I'd always wanted, but I sort of got to a point where a couple of things were kind of puzzling me because I was quite enjoying my life. But I looked around and I thought, there's quite a few people living beside me in these countries who actually really don't like living here. They complain a lot. And I thought, that's interesting. I wonder, you know, why that is, because that's not my experience. And then the other thing that really hit me like a bit of a freight train was I was on my second posting with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade in Singapore. So it wasn't as if I was inexperienced as an expat, but I was hit with depression. And I thought, why has this happened to me? I'm living my dream, my life. Why is it? So fast forward a bit, still, I didn't know the answer to either of those questions. Got back to New Zealand and sort of realized, well, you know, I've pretty much done every kind of expat experience there is. I've gone overseas as a single woman. I've gone with a partner. I've gone with a partner who doesn't have a job. I've gone as a dual career couple. I've had two children overseas. I became the typical trailing spouse myself, sort of following my husband for a while. I repatriated to New Zealand twice, and on the second time, came back pregnant. So I gave birth to my third child in a medical system that I had no familiarity with, even though it was my own country's because I had my previous two in Singapore.
Yeah.
So all of it sort of came together, and I thought, as I started doing a bit more research around the whole kind of expat experience, and I discovered, if you go back to real basic psychology, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which some of your listeners may be familiar with, you know, food, shelter, and clothing are the basic building blocks of survival. So when you come to a new country, if you don't have those things sorted, it really throws you. And I looked back at my experience of depression in Singapore. I had moved into, there was a big mix-up around my housing, and I had moved to move into a property that wasn't my choice. I just had to go and live there. So my home situation, you know, wasn't quite right. And then the other part of it was my community. Instead of working for the New Zealand High Commission there, the equivalent of the US Embassy, I was working in an international organization, which was amazing. But my colleagues were from 21 different countries. So it was really hard initially to build that kind of community and support. So I felt those anchors had gone. So that made me think about what do people actually need to be successful when they move countries. And in New Zealand, the sort of outside picture was we have a very high level of immigration. We have done for probably 15 years now. For example, since the borders opened with COVID, we'd have over 100,000 people come here.
Really?
For a population of 5 million is huge. We're a country of recent migrants. So there were many businesses out there who were bringing people into the country and also private individuals coming. And I thought, well, you know, I can pull on my expertise and background and problem solve for those businesses and for those individuals to optimize their experience of moving to New Zealand so that they can deliver what they need to deliver at work. They can be happy, their families can be happy. So that was the kind of genesis of mobile relocation. So we've been in operation for 7 years now. We run resettlement programs to set people up for success in New Zealand. And most of our client base are businesses who think that's really important. If they're paying to bring people here, then they want them to be successful. And the other 30% are private individuals who find us and use our programs, you know, for their own benefit. So we have a team of 20 throughout the country. So wherever you think your dream might be in New Zealand, we're there.
Yeah.
And I mean, history. Does that cover off what you're asking?
Yeah. I think the next question obviously is like, when are you writing your book or making your movie? I mean, what a life. What a life. That's so fascinating. Wow. I didn't know we were going to have Sarah Hillary talked about in here and hiking the Himalayas. Wow. What a story.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of adventurous New Zealanders, you know, and that's one of the things I think that adventurous Americans kind of connect with. You know, you've got to be a bit of an adventurer to come to New Zealand. You've got to have something in your heart that thinks, something down there for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think one of the, you know, you said you had been an expat, you had been a trailing spouse, you had been the one with the job, you had gone with your husband who didn't have a job and all of those things. And the other thing I think is really interesting, and I share this with you, is that you had also kind of been an expat in your own country because so much of your formative years were spent outside. I feel like I can look the same way at the U.S. and think, I know what it's like to resettle here almost as a foreigner because my years abroad, all of my formative years were abroad. And when I resettled back in the U.S., I felt 100% like a foreigner. I did not feel like I belonged here at all.
Totally. Yeah. And I think for me, and this is one thing I look for in my team, the experience of having relocated in some way yourself, because empathy is a huge part of what we do. You know, and this sounds a bit sort of weird, but the two things that are most important are empathy and organization in my team. They have to be amazing organizers because so many logistics, but it's one of the big myths of relocation that it's all about logistics because it's not. It's actually about the emotional side as much as the sort of organizing everything.
Yeah, sure. The logistics are, you know, upfront, very important. You know, there are certain things you really can't mess up or you won't be able to relocate or you won't get the paperwork done that you need. But after that, I think it's all emotional well-being that really settles you in, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. I mean, thank you so much for giving that like really, really detailed background too of your company. And I didn't realize that you were such a large team. I feel like that's a large team for being New Zealand based, right? Having 20 people across the country.
For us, the local part is really important because any part of New Zealand is different, you know, like any country. So my people need to have really, really detailed local knowledge in order to settle expats into the local housing market, the local community, the local schools. There's no good, you know, being up here in Auckland telling people what another city's like. They need to talk to someone who's actually there on the ground.
Yeah, no, that's totally right. What are some of the, you know, I really do have quite a lot of people reaching out to me about New Zealand in particular. Mm-hmm. I think there's a real interest in moving, especially for queer folks. There is a real interest in moving somewhere that feels safe, definitely mm-hmm. maybe far away. That is also something. But there's a whole group of people who just have really no interest in relocating to Europe, even though they feel like they should feel like they want to move there. Mm-hmm. And there's people who, you know, Mexico and Canada are so nearby, but, you know, those just aren't interesting options for some folks. And New Zealand, like you said, I get a lot of people. I have a client who probably will listen to this and she's going to know I'm talking about her. Her husband is like a semi-professional kayaker, for example. Like New Zealand, you're meant to move to New Zealand, right? Like, I feel like that's part of life in New Zealand, right? So you need to be adventurous. But what are some of the other types of expats you see from your private clients who choose to relocate to New Zealand? What are some of those characteristics that your expats have?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take a step back here because I think what I see with everybody coming from the US is they all have a dream about New Zealand in some way. It's very seldom I'm going to chase this amazing career opportunity in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. That's some other dream that they want to pursue. And that's actually really important and very valuable because having that overarching goal is what gets you through the tough times. And I'll talk about that a bit later. But your question is more about what types of dreams or goals are there. Definitely the people who want to come because they identify with the outdoors in New Zealand. You know, it's very accessible here. I live in 15 minutes from the CBD and I can be probably within 40 minutes, maybe to an hour in traffic, you know, hiking in the forest. I can go 10 minutes in my car, take my kayak down to the beach and go kayaking.
Right.
It's all there for you. So that kind of natural environment and also the environmental kind of values and qualities that people perceive we have in New Zealand. So there's that sort of nature kind of category. And then the other category is some sort of sense of identification with our society and the way people are treated and the importance of relationships here, you know, slower pace of life. Yeah, it's hard to articulate that, but I definitely see people, you know, comparing to where they are in the US at the moment and thinking New Zealand is more how I feel I want to be living. In a society. And then the third area that people relocate for is children. 100%, you know, the families, they want the future of their children to be in New Zealand.
That's so interesting.
They can trade off the things like we don't have Ivy League universities. We have really good universities, but not Ivy League ones. And, you know, we don't have a Silicon Valley, you know, all of the things that the rest of the world looks at the US and says, oh, I want my kids to go there and have all those opportunities. We're finding there's this category of Americans who are saying the opportunities in New Zealand, which are really different to that, are the ones we want for our children. So those would be the main three factors, sort of nature, identification with our society and family. Children.
Yeah. And I mean, I really see that even from, you know, being a parent now. My kids are young still, but it's a sight you don't see anymore here. Kids riding on their bikes or just like living freely. Mm-hmm. You know, everything is like very much organized and every minute is scheduled, but also it just feels not safe to have your kids sort of outside on their own or things like that. So, you know, I definitely think about that as well for my own kids, mm-hmm. giving them a real childhood in some capacity. So that might be part of my dream. I don't know. Maybe that's part of my dream. I'm not sure. Okay. And what about you? I mean, I knew that you had lived abroad, but I did not realize how much and in what capacity. So what is something that you really value about living in New Zealand yourself now that you've, you know, had other experiences, especially in India and Singapore, such different cultures and pace of life to New Zealand?
Yeah. Couple of things. One is what we call whānau, which is, it's a Māori word. It's a concept around, you know, you have your blood relatives, but then you also have a wider whānau, and that is people that you have a connection with. So I think in New Zealand, it's kind of hard to describe, and I certainly feel this way, that there are a lot of different people that I have relationships and connections with in different spheres. Even some of my clients, you know, I get to know them very well. There's that feeling of a society where relationships are so important, and I find that personally very enriching, and it's something that I've been able to take as a New Zealander into my expat life and look for commonalities with people and form relationships, and that's been really, really rewarding. And I think as a Kiwi, I've kind of got that in me. And then the second area, I mean, I'm going to harp on again, like I love the nature of New Zealand and I underestimated that until I went away. And I really didn't appreciate my own country probably until I came back with two preschoolers. And I remember, you know, driving around in the city and every now and again you come up on top of a hill and you look out over the harbour and we have a beautiful island in the middle of the harbour called Rangitoto, which is a volcano. So it's a pointy volcano. And I come over the hill and I think, oh my God, I'm driving my children to daycare and look at this, incredible, you know, just, yeah, that for me is
yeah, and what's funny is,
I feel really wonderful to be able to live here. And in the background here behind me is, this is Waiheke Island, which is an island off the coast of Auckland. You can get there half an hour on the ferry and one end is quite developed, the other end down here. I went on a 4-day hike around the island with some friends. There's a vineyard down there and we did this terrible hike up the hill through the mud. And then down to the vineyard for lunch.
It's yeah, great. And you were rewarded with wine, so it's not so terrible, yeah. Right? Yeah, but it's fun. But what you say about the volcano is really funny to me because those are the moments you usually have when you're living abroad somewhere, and you're like, "Wow, look at this! I'm just driving my kids to daycare, and there's a volcano." But you're actually having that at home again, which is just so interesting.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay, so, and you were talking about some of your, you know, the characteristics of the expats, but just to give some idea, so you're right, New Zealand isn't the place where you go where you think like I'm gonna start a startup or, you know, whatever. But what are like sort of what is the business environment and what are the opportunities that you're seeing, even in including that 70% of your client base, which is the corporate expats that you serve? What are the jobs and opportunities?
Yeah. Well, actually, having just one point there, New Zealand is an amazing place to start a startup.
There you go.
In fact, a number of US VCs who've come down here and are now running here. And there's also quite a lot of government support. So, yeah, it is quite a good place to start. And it's actually very easy to start a business here too because it's small and everybody knows each other and, you know, once you get into things. But, yeah, I mean, the generally speaking, the economy, if you're in America, you think of the economy and you shrink it by a really, really large number of factors, and there you have New Zealand. We have everything, you know, the big four accounting firms, if you're in that, there's a lot of infrastructure development. So there's plenty of jobs for engineers. We have huge shortages in the health sector. So virtually every sector in New Zealand doesn't have enough talent because we're a country of 5 million people. We can't create enough talent. And also we have a culture where people often go away and work for a few years and then come back again. So we're always having to backfill. So, you know, just about any professional job that you can think of, and some that aren't professional too, trades jobs, the trades jobs, you know, is open to internationals. You know, I think you want to talk to me a little bit about visas later, but obviously you do have to get visas to come to New Zealand, but there is plenty of opportunity here. What is the point I made about not coming here for an amazing career opportunity is if you're climbing a corporate ladder, you know, you may not find the next rung here in New Zealand or the scale of business that you're after. So, you know, that's, and the salaries probably are not going to be as good as you might be used to in some sectors, but that's the trade-off that people make. You know, either they're stepping off a career ladder by choice or changing, doing something different, or, as I say, they've got one of those big picture goals, which as long as they're earning enough money, the kind of life factors are more important for them. You know, I had one American client, actually, a very high-powered engineer brought out here to work on some projects. And, yeah, he was earning less. He got a little bit frustrated because he felt things went a bit slowly in New Zealand, so that was a kind of cultural adjustment for him. But the thing that sold their family on it was, he said, it's just normal to take the school holidays off. Mm-hmm. I have 4 weeks of leave every year. And I just say I want to take a week off, you know, and June and go skiing, and they say yes because it's the school holidays. Right. It's just normal. That kind of work-life balance, you know, that was just amazing for them.
Yeah, I know. I'm always telling clients and things like, no, it's true. Healthcare is going to be much cheaper. You'll never go bankrupt from needing healthcare, you know, and things like that. And vacation, people really do take actual vacations for long periods of time. You know, then people just think that's dreamy here, but that's just life in a lot of the developed world, at least, right?
Yeah.
I know. And so what you're saying, though, is really interesting. So yes, okay, like a slight, maybe like a pay cut or like you said, the next rung of the ladder. But also, I think I'm right when I say that the film industry is actually booming and there's a lot of opportunity. Is that true in New Zealand?
Yeah, well, I mean, Peter Jackson is based down here. James Cameron lives in New Zealand. Yeah. So the we do have, I mean, it's not the same scale as Hollywood, but there are definitely a lot of films being made locally here, and also it's used as location for a lot of international films too.
Right. And why wouldn't it be? It's so beautiful, right? But I did want to ask about the visas because, you know, you're talking about those opportunities, but I think, you know, people don't really realize the barrier that a visa can be in order to emigrate or to immigrate to another country. And so when it comes to New Zealand, so there's a lot of opportunity, but what kind of, I know you can't give actual advice. I'm very aware that you legally cannot give us advice, but what are some of the visas that, let's say, people in the professional services go for that they're actually able to get to move to New Zealand?
Yeah. Look, you know, getting visas to come to New Zealand, if you fit the right categories, which are actually quite broad, it is not super difficult. You know, there's a AWV work visa, which usually is obtained through your employer. So if you get a role or a transfer, that's pretty straightforward. And then there's an essential skills work visa, which people can apply for independently, and that's kind of a points-based system. But what I would say broadly is that, and this is probably true of anywhere in the world, but certainly New Zealand, you can look at the Immigration New Zealand website, and I think that should be as much research as you do online, to be frank, because going into chat groups, you get all sorts of people's opinions. Spend the money on a decent visa advisor. And if anybody wants to know of a decent visa advisor, contact me and I will give you some names. I don't get any benefit from doing that on commission or cut or anything, but there are lots of visa advisors because it's quite heavily regulated here, and some of them are terrible and some of them are really good. And it's worth spending the money. Most of them will do an initial call with you for free and give you some idea of you've got no chance, which will be few people, I'd imagine, or yes, there's a pathway, this is how much it's going to cost. It's worth paying for that advice because, as you mentioned right back at the beginning on the logistics front, you know, you can't do anything without a visa. You can't get to New Zealand. And it's very easy to make mistakes in the process through no fault of your own, because I'm not a visa expert. Most expats aren't. And a lot of people will be relocating for the first time, so they don't know how the visa system works. So pay the money, get the expert advice, maximize your chance of success is my what I say to all of our clients, actually, and also our employer clients too. I said you should be using visa advisors as well. Don't expect people to do it by themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. It's like part of feeling happy and feeling settled abroad is really like when you don't have to make every single mistake, it's easier to then settle in. And I guess, you know, we've all had that experience of making every single mistake, but it would be easier if you didn't have to make every single mistake.
Exactly. And to that, I would add that the residence pathways, which is the holy grail for most people, because you can't actually purchase a property until you have residence in New Zealand. And also people want security. The residence pathways are getting opened quite a lot, you know, regularly for different categories of people and things. So again, working with a visa advisor, you should get on the right track at the beginning. If there is a pathway to residency for you, you might not figure that out by yourself, but a visa advisor, if you tell them you want that, then they can get that pathway in place so that you can get it as quickly as you can, as opposed to, as you say, learning on the job and realizing after 5 years, oh, I should have applied for that visa, or I should have got that paperwork in 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So think about that.
Yeah. And what about, you know, so much at post-COVID, post-pandemic, you know, there's so much happening with digital nomad visas and remote workers. Mm. Is that an option for people in New Zealand? Could someone go with their remote job and relocate for a year?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. We don't have a digital nomad visa, but a lot of our clients do work remotely. And I think you'd need to talk to a visa advisor to find out how that would work. I mean, if your partner had a job here already, then you'd get a work visa under them. But there are independent options as well. So that is a little bit complex. But yes, a lot of people do it.
Oh, they do it. So that's interesting, you know, because certain countries in Europe are just so much more friendly for the remote worker than others. So you just see a lot of more mobile folks sort of going to those destinations. And I didn't know if that was an option in New Zealand, but
it's not as straightforward as it is in some European countries, but I have seen it happening. So
it's happening. Yeah, and maybe more so, you know, as mobility becomes more important for everyone. This is sort of off script a little bit, but I'm reading this book about climate change, and I can include a link to it in my notes, and it's basically talking about what the next century will bring. But in this book that is both horrible and also should be mandatory reading for everyone, New Zealand fares quite nicely in the climate change over the next century. Is that something you guys are talking about?
Well,
that's true.
That is so interesting you should say that, because I would say probably in the last 8 weeks, maybe everybody's reading this book, but we have a number of clients from North America and also from Europe in our initial conversations, they're factoring that in. They're saying, oh, yes, you know, from a climate perspective, that's another one of our reasons for coming to New Zealand. And then they're saying, okay, well, we need to talk about, you know, managing climate risk in New Zealand. And I always say to them, well, don't buy a beachfront property. It's not a good idea. Probably won't be insurable soon. Buy a property a little bit further up a hill. You know, we are an island. But generally speaking, yes, the perception does seem to be that from a climate perspective, that is another reason for considering New Zealand.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, especially my clients who are, you know, LGBTQ, there's a lot of intersectionality, Black and brown. There's a lot of neurodivergence in my client base. And it's very interesting that for this group of people, climate change is, I would say, not, it's a major factor. It's definitely one of the deciding factors of where they will relocate to. And so that's another reason why I think there is an interest in New Zealand, but that's increasing. I noticed that over the last maybe year, that change in mentality.
Yeah, as I say, I've just literally, you know, in the last few months, have hearing it come into conversations with clients.
Yeah, I mean, where do you want to give, especially your kids, if you have a family, where do you want to give them a future? You know, somewhere where they could, you know, live is nice. You know, that's sort of a basic need, right? So, okay, so let's talk a little bit about queer folks, since that is primarily who I work with. I mean, of course, I work with all people who are interested in relocating and have that sort of lens, but primarily it's LGBTQ folks and their families. Mm-hmm. And I think we all sort of know gut instinct that New Zealand is a relatively friendly place for queer folks to live. Could you speak a little bit to what life might be like for a queer expat? Perhaps you've had some clients relocate.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'd start off by saying that, you know, I'm going to report my impressions for that community because I'm not a queer person myself. So, you know.
Right. As an ally, please. Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. No, we have had both private clients and also corporate clients from the queer community. Mm-hmm. Some have made a very conscious decision to New Zealand. Some have been transferred, you know, by their work. And the two things I was thinking about this question before the session, the two things that consistently come up in our early conversations are safety and community. And that's the, you know, am I going to be safe? Am I going to find a community? You're right, at a kind of a macro level, there's this perception that New Zealand is, you know, socially liberal and that, you know, it's going to be better than some other countries. So they're in a positive frame of mind to start with, which is great. So around those two things, safety and community. Safety, again, what I've been told by our clients is that once they get here, they do feel safe in a way that they haven't felt before. That, of course, does depend a bit on where you are in New Zealand. And I think that ties into community because one thing I've observed is people have been really successful where they have done research, mainly online, before they come to connect into the queer community in the areas they were looking at. We can help them broadly with identifying, okay, you've got kids who like these activities, the city might suit you or the suburb, whatever. But connecting into those queer communities in those areas, not so much to get advice about whether I should stay in this place or that place, but just to know that there's some safe people to come to. And that also brings me to another really interesting conundrum, which is that I have heard from particularly transgender community that sometimes the New Zealand transgender community is quite difficult to engage with because it has been, they've had to be protective and they still have to be protective to a certain degree about who is admitted into that community, which was something that I hadn't thought of and didn't know about. And I'm not sure whether that's the same in other places in the world or not. So, yeah, I think I'd probably summarise by saying, you know, we can help with the sort of macro picture, but there's also a community engagement piece, which I think is really important and part of the feeling of security that our clients have managed to create for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do want to say, because you mentioned earlier, you know, as far as like the visa and immigration process is concerned, don't spend a lot of time researching online, which is true because there's a lot of bad advice. And also a lot of the advice is singular. It's like this one person with a YouTube channel had this experience. And it's like, well, that's not the experience that everyone is going to have. Yeah. But when it comes to especially any subculture, right? So I always say like whatever, before you move, identify what all of your subcultures are. And that will help you find community when you go. And obviously being LGBTQ is like a major subculture to be a part of, that's where researching online and connecting with communities is really important because you'll just meeting locals. I mean, just meet, you know, if, especially if you're moving like with a family or whatever, like meeting other queer families, for example, would just make it feel much more like home much faster.
Yeah, exactly.
But like generally speaking, same-sex marriage, legal in New Zealand.
Same-sex families in schools. Mm-hmm. I mean, and, you know, you might find differences maybe in more rural areas, probably less common just because, you know, the populations are smaller. But again, I think that community research prior to looking online and thinking, oh, that beautiful beachside community looks amazing, that's where I'm going to live. And then you need to do your research to see whether your community has a presence in that area.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, I think that like all LGBTQ people sort of know or are aware of like urban versus rural almost anywhere. That's going to be similar pretty much anywhere you go.
Like, another same-sex couple, and they were going to travel around the country and do some sort of looking at different places before they settled down. And they mentioned one area they're going to, which I know quite well because my husband comes from that area, which is sort of rural off on the west coast, up to my mind, quite conservative. And I said to them, look, go through there as a tourist, just be a bit careful and a little bit kind of guarded when you're walking around, da, da, da. Anyway, they went off and did their research and found their community there, and they ended up staying in an Airbnb run by a woman around the coast somewhere and just had a fabulous time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just a matter of winding your way through. I think there are very, very few places in New Zealand where you might actually be in physical danger. You might feel perhaps unwelcome or a bit of a curiosity.
I mean, that's really important. I think especially in the US, I think it's happening in North America generally, but the political football of being LGBTQ, that's something that I don't see happening in a lot of other countries, at least in terms of like Europe, New Zealand. I think in Australia, perhaps in some places, I'm not sure. But yeah, so I think, you know, that's what a lot of us are trying to get away from, especially sort of in the next year or two. There's going to be some elections where someone may or may not be reelected, and we might feel like we all need to leave. So be ready for more of us, I think, is what I'm saying. There may be more of us. Yes. And also, I mean, honestly, just speaking about kids again, but like, even if, you know, you and your partner are not a same-sex couple, but you have, you know, LGBTQ kids, that's another deciding factor for a few of my clients actually currently.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have had some situations with, I'm just struggling to think exactly what it was, but yes, that has been a factor in some families' decisions, because I remember discussing it with them. Yeah.
Yeah, no, totally. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what the challenges are, whether you're queer or not queer, but like what are some of the harder aspects of moving to New Zealand? I can certainly guess that being very, very far away from home may be something that you are attracted to, but being on an island in the ocean sort of at the bottom of the map does feel like that may pose some challenges. Is geography and distance one of the challenges that expats face?
Yeah, it is, because, you know, it takes at least 10 hours on a flight to get anywhere that's not Australia. That's how I see it.
Okay.
But, you know, it's all about a lot of these things, and you will know this, Jess, is it's all about mindset. So you're not going to be able to go home and see your family and your friends every 2 months. So how do you build the structures that will enable you to maintain those relationships? Mm-hmm. Whether it's virtual or writing or, you know, storytelling or whatever you do to keep connected, so that when you do go home, it is a positive experience, and then you plan your trip home to make the most out of the relationships. So I think there's no getting away from the facts. And what immediately springs to mind when I say that is, you know, I think back to some of the unhappy expats I knew when I was overseas, who spent a lot of time complaining about how far away it was from home. I mean, complaining, nothing is going to change that. It's just the situation. So how do you work around that and make the goal that you have for coming to New Zealand the most important thing? And then how do you restructure your life so you can maintain the relationships, which the distance is a challenge.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we could, I bet offline, we could talk about those unhappy expats all day, because I was always bewildered by just how grumpy some of them could actually be. But yeah. I mean, you're totally right. You went there for a reason. And so keeping that reason and those goals top of mind probably is what beats and I can imagine you feel isolated or something, you know, it's hard to build community at first, but keeping those goals in mind is what helps. Keeps you happy. Yeah.
Indeed. And I think a couple of other things which I hear from most of our clients, but particularly from Americans, is language. You know, we speak English. So, you know, it should be easy to come here, shouldn't it? English-speaking country, won't be a problem. It'd be so easy. One example I'll give you is the word bench.
Okay.
Now, what does mean to you when I say?
Like a bench, like that you sit on?
Oh, very good.
Because it
has two meanings. That's one. Okay. The other one is the countertop.
Oh, yeah, no. No idea.
So you're in a cafe and the barista says to you, oh, your coffee will be on the bench over there.
Right.
And you're looking around for a bench. So there's a lot of little colloquialisms like that. There's also te ao Māori and the Māori language, which is the world of Māori, and also the language, which is integrated throughout our society. Your kids will come home speaking some Māori words, singing songs. They'll know their colours and their numbers and things in Māori.
Wow.
And as a parent, you won't know that. They'll have to teach you that, but that's fine. So that's something that people will need to get their heads around. And then I think it was this whole topic of expectations around it being easy because it's English speaking and sort of similar to the US is a huge myth. And it was summed up very well by an American client of mine who'd spent a day going around looking at properties. And he said to me, you know, Bridget, on the surface, everything looks the same, but underneath the infrastructure is completely different.
Mm.
And what he meant was our housing market, the way you rent a house, the size of the market, the types of properties, everything about that is totally different to the US, the way a realtor operates. Mm. So on the surface, yeah, I can see an apartment, I'll go and live in that apartment. But unpacking how to achieve that is a big job. So in some ways, people who come from English-speaking countries can be at a disadvantage because they make assumptions about the ease of moving to New Zealand, which just aren't true.
And so I think that goes back to mindset, because if you know you're moving to a Spanish-speaking country, you're moving open to learning because you know there's no other choice. Probably the most difficult expat experience I had was moving to England for the exact same reason. You know, I thought, well, they speak English there. This will be easier. I was getting a degree there. I thought, I want that to be in English. Actually, that was the most difficult time I had because I didn't understand like 50% of what was being said to me, even though I know these are words that are in my language. I didn't know what people meant. And if you're going there because of the English language, I think you have to have in your mind, actually, it's a foreign language. It is a totally different dialect.
Yeah, yeah.
And people aren't expecting you to not understand either. That's the thing. It's like everyone's a local, so they expect you to know what they're saying. They're not adjusting for you, you know, unless they're excited that there's like an American in the cafe and they say, oh, it's the counter, you know, but that never really happens, you know.
Oh, because they don't think of it because they don't know that word counter. We don't use the word counter.
Right, exactly. Counter is a stupid word. It would mean somebody who counts anyway. So
yeah,
why
that's
is it
right.
called a counter?
I was thinking exactly the same thing when you said that. We have to learn to say that when we go to the US.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's right. And that's really interesting about the language. Now, I am hearing a little bit about this for a very current conversation, but I am hearing that the housing market is very difficult right now in New Zealand. Is that true? And do you have any tips for that?
Absolutely. You know, the housing market has been difficult in New Zealand since we started mobile relocation 7 years ago.
Okay.
We have a house shortage and we have very high levels of migration, most of whom can't purchase properties because they're not resident immediately to go into the rental market. And traditionally in New Zealand, we're not a country of renters. So renting property until about 20 years ago, very few people did it. So our pool of rental properties is very small and the quality of housing is very, very variable here. And you don't have a lot of corporate landlords. So these are all things part of that difference. Now, you know, I would say, of course, work with us and we will get you a property. But broadly speaking, you need to expect that it is going to be hard. And it is going to be hard for you as an expat because you're not a local. Because if you put yourself in a property manager's shoes, of course, they're going to take somebody who's got a reference maybe from the same property management company and they know the company they work for. All these sorts of things. So a couple of tips that anyone can take on board, whether you're working with us or not, is don't expect to find a property before you arrive. That's one of those we were talking before about what you can do in advance, what you can't. Just don't even waste time doing that because, again, the person who's gone to the viewing and seen the agent is far more likely to get it than the one who applies from offshore who nobody knows who you are. That's one thing. Secondly, they're very careful about your expectations of what you're going to need to pay for a rental property. There's a lot of information online, and I'll also say on our website, we've got over 100 articles about all aspects of moving to New Zealand, including the housing market. So have a look there. Mm-hmm. And in there, you will find articles which link into the average cost of renting in different cities. Those averages are only averages. It depends hugely on what you want and where you want to be in the city. So don't be misled by looking at an average and saying that's what I'm going to pay. You know, you need to either learn more when you get here or, you know, get advice on that. Yeah, those will probably be the main two things people would need to think about. And being aware, of course, that your expectations in the US about property are not going to translate to New Zealand. For example, again, linguistic thing, we talk about a suburb. In the US, a suburb has a particular meaning. You know, it's normally similar housing, decent distance out of the city. Yeah. Here, a suburb is more what we call a neighborhood. I live in a suburb which is 15 minutes from the city. I live in a historic house with a garden, and I've got next to me some townhouses. You know, it's not the same thing. So you need to be educated as to what to expect in New Zealand, and also you may have to adjust your expectations. You know, one of the most difficult things for us is when a client comes in and says, this is my life now, I want the same. And same usually doesn't exist. We need to figure out what are the key elements or why you're living like that, and then translate that into New Zealand housing.
Yeah. I think the only way that you can have almost exactly the same life is if you are ultra wealthy, and that translates to like living in the heart of any major global city, then you can have almost exactly the same life. Otherwise, you'll have to get more local real quickly. And it's a different life.
Well, indeed, even for some of our clients are hyper wealthy, and you know, they live in New York, say, you know, and in their bracket of the market at any one time, there might be, I don't know, maybe 100 or more apartments that they might look at. In New Zealand, there might be one.
Right.
Because the rental market in that part of the property market is not that big.
Right.
And there aren't that many apartments of that quality anyway. You know, so.
Right. Yeah.
Different scale. Scale is important. And the other thing I just quickly mentioned about housing is housing and public schooling are really closely tied in New Zealand. So you need to almost do those two things together, because you have to live in a school zone in order to go to a particular school.
Yeah. Yes. The school district game, right? Finding. Mm. Yeah, totally. That's similar to here, I can tell you. Okay. And so let me just go through a little bit of a timeline for someone who is just trying to figure out if this is right for them. But basically, like, when you apply for visas, are we talking about like year long wait times that you see people waiting? Or is this something that can happen relatively quickly?
I haven't seen many people waiting for a year. It is going to depend a little bit about how complex their case is.
Sure.
If you're a year out, I think you need to get in touch with a visa advisor now and get them to give you an answer to that question for your particular circumstances. Mm-hmm.
So less than a year.
But it's not that slow.
Yeah. No, good. Okay. So like for the dreamers out there, within a year, you could be living in New Zealand, essentially. Right.
I mean, all going well. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And then when it comes to when you say people obviously can't rent before they move, which is so obvious, and you know, you have to really think about that. Who would rent to a foreigner they've never met? It just doesn't happen. What do people do when they first come then? How do they, are they renting Airbnbs, staying in hotels? What's that first temporary housing look like?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm going to talk about what we recommend for our clients and how we work with them. Is we do quite a lot of work with them pre-arrival, all this preparation stuff. But one of the really key things is temporary accommodation, because that can actually make or break your initial experience. You know, arriving and getting into this terrible hotel where it's feels unsafe and you can't get food for your kids, and, you know, sets you off into a negative frame of mind from the beginning, because you're vulnerable. So what we do is work with people. We generally recommend Airbnb because it gives you the flexibility to try out a particular neighborhood that you might want to live in. Exactly. And the quality and the options are much better than serviced apartments. Serviced apartments in New Zealand are not that good. So we would typically work with the individual, the family, figure out some neighborhoods that might be suitable for them, get them to go away and find three or four Airbnbs, give them back to us for a bit of quality control, like, actually, that one's right next to the freeway, or that one. Yeah, one client again found this amazing, amazing Airbnb, Bridget, really got to stay there. And I said, do you realize is it actually a red light district? Just, you know, down in front of you where you are. Because it was really reasonably priced. It looked great.
Of course, sure. I can imagine.
A bit of local knowledge there. So a mixture of local knowledge and Airbnb, I think, gets people off to a really good start when they first arrive. And we recommend people, when they're working with us, 2 weeks is usually sufficient in an Airbnb. And in fact, I don't like to stay longer, because I think it's really unsettling your kids can't start school when you're in an Airbnb because you don't have a permanent abode. And you're living, you know, out of suitcases. You don't know, you can't start establishing your community because you don't know where your community is. So our emphasis is really working with people to get that rental property really fast. And we can usually get that sorted out within 2 weeks. Give or take occasionally if there's a move-in date that's a little bit later, you know, then it might be a little bit longer. But it's definitely doable within 2 weeks if you have if you're working with us.
And what about driving? So how long can you drive on your foreign license before you need to like take a test and apply?
Excellent question. Well, this is a real plus for New Zealand. Oh. If your license is written in English, which it will be from the US, you can drive for a year in New Zealand on that. Okay. And every time you leave New Zealand, that year starts again. So if you go on a little winter holiday to Fiji, when you come back into New Zealand, that year starts again.
What kind of a scam is that? That's lovely.
Well, it's actually for tourists. I think it's really designed for tourists.
Sure.
But a huge benefit for expats. And transferring your license over is not such a big thing. From the US, there's a list of countries where you have to sit some tests, and I actually can't remember whether the US is on that list or not. But
I think we should be, because we barely have to take a test. I mean, it's pretty bad. It's so easy. Yeah. So, yeah.
But the good thing that I say to all our clients is it's one less thing to worry about in the first week that you arrive. You know, you don't need to be concerned about that. That's something you can put on the 6 month list to review.
Yeah, yeah. And it's something that you don't think about, but it does become a major problem. And, you know, I spoke with someone recently who had moved to Italy and they had to take a driving exam in Italian. There was no other option. Yeah. And so imagine, you know, you have to do that within, I think it's 6 months or something like that. That's actually a huge impact on your life, especially if you decided to live more rurally. You've really got a challenge ahead of you now, something you didn't even consider.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so we're talking about like less than a year you could be living there, 2 weeks until you get a place to live that's more permanent, especially for schooling, for families, et cetera. And you can drive on your own license. So really within a short amount of time, that's sort of the timeline of how you can relocate to New Zealand.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about, as I say, with our clients, might be a bit longer if you did it yourself. And the other thing I'd just highlight too is on our website, we've got a Move to New Zealand checklist, which has really comprehensively everything you need to think about. And it's deliberately not time bound because it's more important to know what's ahead of you and start tackling things than to have some sort of arbitrary time frame. Because as I'm sure you will agree with me, Jess, relocation is nothing if not inherently unstable and unpredictable. So sometimes faster, sometimes it will go slower, but you just need to make sure you've covered off everything that's on the list.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think the reason why I'm sticking with the timeline question there just a little bit is because one of the underestimated things about moving is the packing up of your life at home also takes a certain amount of time. And if, for example, sometimes the visa immigration, the paperwork will come through quicker. And now you're like, oh my God, we're leaving in 60 days. Like we have to sell the house and pack and all that stuff. So it's important to sort of be clear on like how fast everything can go or how slow it can go.
Exactly.
And so, you know, you were talking a little bit about the Maori culture and, you know, a lot of people might not really factor that into the experience of moving to New Zealand, but how can people learn? I know that your website, I've downloaded your checklist. I think your website is so full of information. But in terms of like consuming media, you know, we talked a little bit about this offline, but what are some sort of like books, TV shows? I think it's called Flight of the Conchords that I watched. I chewed that up several years ago. But realistically, what are some media that folks can consume to sort of start to understand the rich fabric of culture in New Zealand?
Yeah. Look, definitely go and have a look at our articles on the website because there's links through to some ideas there for you. In a couple of New Zealand, really powerful New Zealand movies, and one of them is a book and a movie, so I recommend that. It's called Whale Rider, and it was directed by Nikki Caro, who also directed Mulan. She's a New Zealand director, but she's become very successful in the US as well. Mm-hmm. And it's a story written by an author called Witi Ihimaida, who's a Māori author, and it's a sort of a traditional tale based on the east coast of New Zealand about a whale. It's hard to describe, but anyway, read that.
Okay.
It may be a slightly challenging read because it's written in a very mystic kind of way, but it really gives you a good window into Māori culture. But perhaps first watch the movie because that might be a bit more accessible. And then there's another movie called The Piano, which was made quite a while ago by another New Zealand female director called Jane Campion. And for me, it's a colonial, it's sort of colonial history and sort of interaction a little bit between Māori and Pākehā, Pākehā's European New Zealanders. But scenery in that is just so much, so New Zealand, and more so than Lord of the Rings is pretending to be somewhere else, and it's right. Beautiful. But we know it's New Zealand, whereas this is just a story of New Zealand in New Zealand. Absolutely stunning. Yeah, those are a couple of examples, but there's a lot. Yeah, Flight of the Conchords, that will introduce you to New Zealand humour. If you find it baffling, then that's what you're going to face. Prepare, no, that's good. Very dry, very understated. If you laugh out loud, then that's excellent. You're on your way into New Zealand culture because we think it's hilarious.
Right.
So those would be a couple of tips.
Yeah, I think it's so helpful to do that. I mean, anyway, you know, even if you're just interested, but especially if you're going to move, finding that local media that you can consume. And also, like for your kids, finding kids shows that are local so that they sort of also have a little bit of an understanding of what the kids might be watching there and that sort of thing. I always find that to be good advice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so now how can people find you and where can they get in touch with you? And at what point in their journey should they start actually working with you?
Okay, right. Where can they find me? LinkedIn, Bridget Romaines. Find me there. Connect with me and tell me that, you know, you've heard this podcast and Jess is your connection. Because we love connections in New Zealand. Then I go, oh, yeah, of course. Now I know who you are.
Right.
But what I've told you, I'm not going to tell you the same thing again. Our website, www.mobile-relocation.com. And Jess is going to send out the links for that. On there, there's actually the front page. We try to make it really user-friendly, but it's got three boxes. Are you a returning Kiwi? Are you an employer or are you coming to New Zealand as an expat from somewhere else in the world? Probably the third box is what most people would go and look at, and it kind of lays out what we do there for you. In terms of when to get in touch with us, I really, really like to talk to people as soon as possible, even at the point where they're thinking about coming to New Zealand. I'm more than happy just to have a call because I think knowledge is power. And look, you know, I'm very honest with people. If they say to me, you know, oh, here's a red. I forgot to mention this before. We don't actually have an Amazon fulfillment center in New Zealand. The closest one is in Australia. So if you exist on Amazon delivering everything you need immediately, I've said to clients, there is no real Amazon Prime in New Zealand. Some people go, oh, you know, that's a deal for you. I'm going to tell you that and you're going to know, and that's important. If it's not, then think about how to deal with that. So I will always be honest, and I'd rather that, you know, you chose a different country if New Zealand isn't going to be the right place for you. So to me, that really, that conversation at the decision-making point is really valuable. And from there on in, once you've decided you want to be part of New Zealand, you know, we can be the resource and the pathway for you, you know, introducing you to the immigration advisors, the tax advisors, doing the pre-arrival support, helping you get an idea of which city you want to move through, right through the whole process of, you know, finding you somewhere to live, sorting out your schools, the whole shebang. So to me, we're most valuable when we engage early on. And in fact, the way our pricing structure works is it doesn't make any difference, honestly, if you just sooner rather than later. Obviously, if you engage us at the last minute, then we can only do a limited amount of work for you. But whether you come to us sort of 2 months beforehand or 12 months beforehand, that doesn't make any difference because we have to do the same amount of, or the same things we have to go through, whether it's in 2 months or whether it's in 12 months with you helping you make all those decisions and do the preparation. The piece on the ground is pretty much the same.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, you're probably fixing less mistakes if they're coming at you from the beginning, which actually takes almost like less time, right? Because you're not shoehorning in issues at the end.
And it's less stressful for everybody. You know, I think preparation is just so important. Preparation and planning with local knowledge alongside you. What I think is really distressing for people is when they go and do a lot of research online and come up with invalid information or incorrect conclusions because they haven't got a local lens on it to say the things like, you know, that type of property you're looking for actually doesn't exist in New Zealand. What do you really need in a house? Here's what the solution is.
Yeah.
So, I think that pre-arrival engagement is what we call it. Pre-arrival engagement is really, really valuable.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, I'll end with this. I mean, we started with your amazingly interesting life, and I think you really should be working on a book deal. I do, just an opinion I have, but it's fascinating. But also working with someone or your whole team has relocated, you said that's really important, but working with people who know the corners to look around when you don't, working with people who have relocated, working with a local is great, but working with locals who have been expats is even more important because there's just so many mistakes that locals can't help you with. They don't know they don't know a lot. You need people who have been expats to really help you through some of the more difficult aspects, I think, of relocating.
Absolutely. And one thing that I just comment on is that often people will say, oh, I've got a friend or somebody at work, they're going to help me. And what they don't necessarily realize is that person is only looking at it through their lens. So their friend or their person at work will say, this is the best school in Auckland. Mm-hmm. You must live in the suburb. And from their perspective, absolutely right. Their child is really happy there. They love that area, but they're not you. And sometimes when people only know one or two people in the country, if you're an expat, you know, they sort of latch onto that, what is really advice. It's not objective. I mean, we are really, being objective is our goal. And our goal is to have our clients become as informed as a New Zealander about making these decisions. So
exactly.
We're just loading them up with everything they need to know, and as you say, looking ahead and around the corner so that then they can make an informed decision that's right for them. Not my opinion, it's right for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. We will include every link that we talked about will be in the show notes for this episode and also on the website. And I really thank you so much for taking the time to explain this for people today.
Thank you, Jess. It's been an absolute pleasure, you know, to be talking to an audience of queer folks who are interested in New Zealand. I mean, that makes my heart sing to think that they feel it is going to be their place in the future. And, you know, we'd love to be part of that journey with anybody who's interested.
All right. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Adventure Calls podcast, where we empower queer folks and their families to move, live, and thrive abroad. If you liked what you heard, please head over to Apple Podcasts or anywhere you're listening to this show and give us a follow so you catch our next episodes as well. If you really liked what you heard, then we'd love if you could take the time to leave a review or even share this with a friend. And if you want more queer content about moving abroad or your own international relocation strategy, head over to rainbowrelo.com. That's rainbowrelo.com. And you can join our free Facebook group, Queer Expats. That's all for now. And until next time, I'm Jess Drucker, pushing you to listen to your gut and follow your own personal call to adventure.